from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thank you very much for joining us today for a conversation all about COVID-19 and how it is impacting our community here in the Cooley region. And we're joined by several guests today whom I'll introduce now. We have from Gunderson Health System, Dr. Todd Kowalski. Dr. Kowalski, thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
From Mayo Clinic Health System, Dr. Aaron Morcombe joins us. Dr. Morcombe, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me as well.
And we have two guests from the La Crosse County Health Department. First, we have Maggie Smith. Maggie, thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome. We're happy to be here.
And Jackie Cutts, also from the La Crosse County Health Department. Jackie, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
I want to just get started with it's been a few weeks since we've talked about this on this show. I know everybody has their perception of how things are going in the community, but let's talk about it from the health department's perspective. Jackie, how are things? Give us sort of the snapshot of how COVID-19 is currently impacting the La Crosse area.
So I think it's great to have some hope. We haven't had that in a while, and it's really good to feel hope. So we've kind of seen a reduction in the number of cases, and we're seeing a reduction in hospitalizations, and that's really hopeful. We have vaccine that's starting to roll out. People are starting to get vaccinated. That's a really hopeful perspective. It is also helpful to remember, though, that we're still kind of above the threshold of where we'd really like to be. So continuing all those good behaviors until we have really robust vaccine coverage helps us to continue trending the right direction. So continue getting those cases down, continue getting that test positivity down. That is really going to help our community return to normal even faster by continuing those good behaviors.
So when you talk about test positivity, you're not talking about specifically the number of infected people, but basically the percentage of tests that people take that come back positive?
Right. So there are two different data points there. There's the case activity, which is the number of cases that we see in a day. We usually express it as a rate. So the number of cases per 100,000 people per day, that's something that we monitor. And that really is based on the number of cases that we know exist through that PCR testing mechanism. That has been decreasing for the last few weeks, which is the right trend, and we want it to continue, which means people need to keep doing those good behaviors, get vaccinated when you're eligible, those kind of things. And then we also look at testing positivity. So the percentage of tests that are returning positive, that has been decreasing, but we would like it to be about half or less than what it is now. So get tested if you're sick, get tested if it would be prudent to do so, and then wanting to see kind of that number continue to come down, because that means that we're testing enough people to capture all the disease that's really in the community.
If somebody's interested in knowing how many cases La Crosse County is experiencing at the moment, what's the best way to express that right now? I mean, I know in the earlier on, you were saying we've got 5 new cases today. We've got 2 new cases today. We had no new cases today. Of course, the numbers are a lot higher now than they were in those early days, and you're expressing them a little differently. What does it look like now? How many cases are we experiencing now?
We do actually have that data published on our website. You can find it at lacrossecounty.org/COVID-19, and then you can click on the Cooley COVID-19 Collaborative, which is a collaboration between Mayo, Gunderson, the county, and a lot of diverse partners. So it includes business, K-12, long-term care, universities, lots of good partners involved in that collaborative work. And we do share that data on that page. And it does include both the 7-day running average of cases per day, as well as the case rate for the past 7 days. And you can see kind of how it changes over time. So if that's something you're interested in, I would definitely encourage you to visit that website. But I think that we have been averaging more towards, 30 to 40 in the last week. Certainly coming down a lot from where it was, which is where we'd like it to kind of move towards.
Dr. Kowalski with Gunderson Health System, there were some concerns around the holidays that hospitals were running out of bed space. I remember talking to multiple medical professionals from La Crosse and outside La Crosse who had concerns even about if our facilities here in town are filled, where can we even send patients with there being limited supplies of beds in the larger cities even near us? What does that situation look like now in terms of Gunderson's capacity?
Yeah, Ezra, that's a great question. So we were, as a region, as a health system, as a state, really, really stressed in November and early December. In terms of our ability to staff the hospitals, in terms of the volumes of patients who are coming in, and the entire area was stressed. So there was not easy pressure relief points to get patients to when we were really filling up so quick. But it's a much better position we're in that right now. From a hospital perspective, we have about a third as many people hospitalized now that we did just a couple of months ago. And while that's still a lot of folks, and there's still plenty of COVID illness that we're dealing with, it's on a magnitude that is much more manageable and sustainable from a hospital perspective. So it's a much better place to be. And then you compound that with the fact that our greatest stressor was our staff availability in terms of their quarantines, them being sick, them being out caring for sick family members. And with the arrival of the vaccine, and now we're really working through getting all of our staff their second shots and being really protected, that's a really a strong position that will help us from a staffing perspective. And it leaves me optimistic about our abilities to continue to care for the folks we need to care for.
Without making people get complacent, Dr. Morcombe, are things trending in a similarly positive direction at the Mayo Clinic?
Yeah, echoing the same things that was said on behalf of Gunderson, our cases have gone down significantly over the last few weeks as well. Back in November, early December, we were at a point where we were really reaching bed capacity, not just ICU bed capacity with COVID patients, but also just general medical floor capacity. And that has trended significantly in the right direction, which I'm very happy about. That we could have had a different situation with the holidays being, you know, a month or so ago. So I think that people have done a nice job of, at least in our community, abiding by those recommendations of not having big gatherings and doing their social distancing. So kudos to people for that.
Dr. Morcombe, as you talk about your colleagues, and you heard what Dr. Kowalski referred to earlier as even the stress of medical systems trying to keep their staff healthy enough to participate in taking care of people. What's the situation like now in terms of just the stress that you as medical professionals are under? Are you able to get some time away from work? Are you able to keep your mental state in a positive enough place to care for people? Or how is that going as a medical community?
Yeah, I think especially with the cases, hospitalization cases going down, that has gotten significantly better, not just from a provider standpoint, but also nursing standpoint. There was some tightness on having enough staff, and we had to pull some staff from outpatient to work inpatient with just higher volumes of patients. And if staff got sick, obviously they had to be out. So I think that the spirit on that aspect has gotten better. Also, echoing what was said on behalf of Gunderson, we are also pretty much getting to the end of getting people their second doses. So we're everyone that is going to opt in here for healthcare professionals have gotten their first, and we're working on those second doses now. And I think that's really helped with people's spirit for going forward to knowing that we have those immunity in our healthcare professionals to help continue to care for patients and hopefully have less that get COVID themselves because they've been vaccinated.
You talked about the vaccine, and that's one of the things that we are going to focus on as our conversation continues in our next segment. We're going to talk about who's been getting the vaccine, who's up next, and when something like that might be available to the general public. I know a lot of people have questions about how quickly the vaccine was rolled out and its safety. We're going to address all those kinds of concerns as our program continues. We're talking to, you just heard Dr. Aaron Morcombe from the Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse, also with Dr. Todd Kowalski from Gunderson Health System. We're joined by Jackie Cutts of the La Crosse County Health Department and Maggie Smith of the La Crosse County Health Department, and our conversation will continue in just a moment. If you'd like to catch up with this episode or stream on demand a previous episode of our show, you can find them all on our website. It's WPR.org/newsmakers. The program continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. And it's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you very much for tuning in. We're talking about COVID-19 as it continues to have an effect on our listeners throughout Wisconsin, and especially here in the Cooley region, is what we're talking about with experts from Mayo Clinic, from Gunderson Health System, and from the La Crosse County Health Department. And now we're talking about vaccine rollout. That's the really the latest news on the horizon, as we've had medical professionals, first responders, and others who have had access to that vaccine. And it now the potential audience for that vaccine continues to grow as more and more people are receiving it. And to that end, my first question goes to Maggie Smith from the La Crosse County Health Department. Maggie, who has been able to receive the vaccine up to this point?
So up till this point, the state of Wisconsin guidelines have prioritized frontline healthcare workers. And so that was really the first effort, was to connect those people who have the highest risk of exposure to that available vaccine. And then over the last week or so, we've seen a couple other populations be added to that. So police and fire personnel, and then those 65 and older has been the latest update. And we are awaiting the final language for this next phase, which is phase 1B, to see which populations will be prioritized.
And so that phase 1A, phase 1B, how many phases are there in the plan, as people might be wondering, like, which phase am I in?
That's a great question. I've heard talk about phase 1A, 1B, 1C, and then I've heard talk about phase 2. I don't know that I can answer if there will be phases beyond that. And we work really closely with the state, and they have an ethics committee, this state disaster medical advisory committee, which puts out all of that guidance.
There's been some discussion, and you might not know the answer to this or not, but there was a push to include grocery store workers in the next phase. And I think I saw yesterday or so that might be happening. Do you know officially on that yet?
We don't know officially. Like others, we are eagerly awaiting the finalized language. Like you mentioned, it was shared for public comment, and then that committee met to review all of those comments, and we're expecting that final language soon.
Okay. So without making any promises, and certainly without giving out your office phone number or anything like that, like, just is there kind of like a spitball in terms of like when the general public might have access to scheduling an appointment to get this vaccine?
That's a great question. And I think the limiting factor really is the availability of the vaccine itself. So even if SDMAC, which is, that State Disaster Medical Advisory Committee, even once they make their recommendations, we have to have enough vaccine for all of those people. And the population, just to look at the populations that have already been prioritized, adults that are 65 and older, that's a really significant size, a significant group of people that need to be connected with vaccine. And so we don't have an exact timeline for when each person will be able to get a vaccine, though we know that's a common question.
I'm trying. I don't want to put you on the spot. I know people really want an answer to this question. Would it surprise you if are people thinking like another month or like another 2, 3, 4 months? I mean, should the vaccine be more widely available, like really in the coming month or so, or should people be thinking that this might be going into the summer?
I don't know that I can give you the answer you're looking for, which is to be specific. I think we're all very hopeful that we'll have ample supply of vaccine and that we can ramp up the rollout as phase 1A sort of wraps up and we move into phase 1B. I know that certainly all of us on this call today are eager to see the population be able to receive vaccine once it's available.
In terms of, I don't want to ask anybody any of their, personal medical business. I'm assuming as healthcare professionals, at least a lot of you would have had access to receiving the vaccine already. Does anybody want to talk about what their experience has been receiving the vaccine in terms of some of the side effects that people worry about or what you experienced as you received either the first or the second dose of it?
I'm happy to jump in on that for starters.
Okay, Dr. Kowalski.
Because I'll tell you, I'm 2 hours removed from receiving the second vaccine in my left arm, and I feel great. And we'll see if that holds. After my first vaccine, I had the typical reported side effects of a little bit of a sore arm and just a little bit of kind of the blahs, if you will, or malaise for less than a day. And we'll see what the second vaccine holds. But but I think that's my personal experience. And if we just share what we're seeing as healthcare and what has been reported in the studies, that a minority of people will have some amount of a sore arm or a headache or maybe a low-grade fever with the first shot. And then with the second shot, there is, and I think this has been well reported, a little bit more significant of those things, maybe a little bit more fever, a little more malaise, more headache. But overall, our organization and the folks who are getting it are doing very well. And it hasn't had that concerning impact of so many people having to be out because of the reactions of the side effects. We just really haven't experienced that as an organization.
Is it your experience that those side effects are similar to what some people might experience with like a flu shot, a pneumonia shot, a tetanus shot, something like that?
Yeah, they're on the same spectrum. Some of them can be a bit more severe, but they're on the same spectrum of typical vaccine side effects is what the majority of people will experience. My arm has typically hurt worse after a tetanus shot than after this one.
Dr. Morcom from Mayo Clinic Health System, this vaccine was rolled out pretty quickly compared to others. The technology behind it, though, has existed for quite some time. Are you concerned as a medical professional about the safety or efficacy of the vaccine or the short process that it went through to get approved?
Yeah, so the efficacy thus far for the short time that we've had the vaccine seems to be very good, even in comparison to a lot of our other immunizations. So 95% efficacy for both the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine after two doses is phenomenal and better than a lot of other efficacy data for other common vaccinations that we have that have been around for quite some time. So the efficacy, I'm not worried about at all. It is an mRNA vaccine, so has a part of the spike to COVID-19 so that your body can make immunity to it, but doesn't actually have any active virus in it. So it's not possible to get COVID from the vaccine. There aren't a lot of preservatives or anything in the vaccine, so I have no qualms about the safety of it at all. I think the risk of getting COVID-19 infection and potential long-term risks of COVID-19 infection far outweigh the benefit of getting vaccine, both for yourself as well as for benefits to the community. You never know who you could come into contact with that you could pass that on to, and that could have a potentially life-threatening impact on. One thing I was going to say about that last question with vaccine side effects, mm-hmm. I have also had, I've only had my first dose. My second one is slated for next week, and I didn't have any side effects to the initial dose. My arm hurt a bit, but I agree with what was said by the previous provider that it was definitely not as bad as I thought it was going to be, and actually it didn't hurt as much as a tetanus vaccine. So I work in the residency here at family medicine residency at Mayo, and we have had some of our residents have some of that fever and body aches, especially after their second dose. The magic hour seems to be like 10 to 12 hours after getting that dose, and it's usually gone in 24 to 48 hours. You can self-medicate with some ibuprofen or Tylenol, and that helps to take it down, but nothing that's been a really severe reaction. And that's actually a good sign if you get some of those symptoms that you're making a very good immune response to COVID. So not a sign that you have COVID infection, but a good sign you're making good antibodies.
Okay. Interesting point to hear that. Dr. Kowalski, I hate to bring up the internet. You just see everything on the internet. But one of the things that that someone pointed out to me the other day was purportedly a medical doctor on the internet who was saying people not that they shouldn't get the vaccine, but they should exercise caution and all this kind of stuff, because this really did come out quickly, and you know, this is still experimental. And for people who are not medically educated and have not been to college for this and have not been to medical school, you know, they might say, well, why shouldn't I be cautious? And yeah, this did come out quickly. And it seems like the term experimental might really be appropriate for it. How do you address concerns like that from people in the public who might have seen something on the internet or gotten something in an email or seen something on a maybe less than journalistic website?
Yeah, well, certainly that addresses the idea of vaccine hesitancy, or someone who's hesitant to get the vaccine for whatever reason. And my suggestion to them would be, take that interest in in understanding the vaccine, and just make sure you channel it towards reputable, reliable websites, whether that be the CDC, whether that be Gunderson's website or Mayo's website. Make sure you have your question answered, but if you do so through the correct scientifically validated processes, what you're gonna find is this is, in my view, as an infectious disease doctor who's been practicing for about 20 years, it's amazing that we have a shot this effective, this safe, and this fast. And I take it as an amazing, really blessing and success of science to get this done. So that would be my first response. My second one would be, frankly, to know, I just got my vaccine. Dr. Morcombe just got hers and is getting her second one. Those who know this information best are lining up to get them. We've had very good uptake amongst our staff here at Gunderson. And I think that reflects their understanding and education that we've done of the value of this vaccine, not only for themselves, but for their loved ones that they interact with and for our community as a whole, to get back to some semblance of normalcy that we all crave so very much.
Maggie Smith and Jackie Cutts are with us from the La Crosse County Health Department. I don't know which one of you would rather take this question. So if you raise your hand, I'll point out to our listeners who's about to answer. But my question is, as a health department, as you're rolling out the vaccine, as it becomes more and more widely available, I know the sort of pipe dream goal might be for 100% of people to receive the vaccine. But really, what percentage of vaccination are you honestly hopeful for in our community? Jackie, you want to take that one?
Yep. So what we're really trying to get to is what's called herd immunity. That is the concept that it's not just that you protect yourself when you get vaccinated, but if a lot of us get protected through vaccine, we protect the people around us. So I have an immune compromised kiddo. We're thinking about people who can't get vaccine because they're allergic to something in it, because they have a medical condition that means they can't get it. We get a benefit from vaccine beyond what it gives to us. We help to protect people who really can't get vaccinated. And that's what we're trying to get to. Science yet hasn't told us exactly what percentage that needs to be to get to herd immunity. We think it's somewhere between 70 and 80%. And that's what we're going to shoot for at the state level, is 80% coverage. But we're going to learn more about that as time comes. And what we would say is, if you are eligible to get the vaccine and you have talked with your provider, you're in one of those eligible groups and it's offered to you, please get it, both for the protection that it provides to you, as well as the protection that it provides to our community at large, to the people that you love, to the people you're friends with, to your hairdresser that you want to go get your hair done at a salon, whoever it is that you're around. That vaccine protects you. It also helps to protect the rest of us so we can kind of get back to some semblance of normalcy. The other comment I had was, you know, we get that question a lot about, you know, this was done so quickly, is it really safe? And I think it's always helpful to remember that the pieces that were done quickly were the pieces of administration and red tape and funding and investment in science, so that we could expedite that timeline. There weren't like shortcuts taken for safety. It still went through the same vigorous process of making sure that the science was there to back up both the efficacy and the safety of the vaccine before it was rolled out to the public. So I think it's just helpful to remember that the pieces that were shorter were the investment of resources and funding and kind of those pieces. So when you get rid of the red tape, it makes it go a lot faster. And I think that just speaks really highly of kind of the scientific community and all the people that invested all of that time and resources to really bring about that solution quickly.
Maggie, earlier we mentioned about the sort of downward trend of COVID infection in the community. Our conversation is coming to a close, but I certainly want to give you another opportunity just to remind people, because we don't know when the vaccine will be more widely available, and we don't know when we're going to reach that sort of herd immunity status. What should people be doing in the meantime? What is it that's making these numbers go down? And what behavior should people be engaging in at this point in the infection's history in our community?
So I think that while we're all very hopeful about the downward trend that we're seeing in numbers, we do want to remind people that the pandemic hasn't ended. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. The vaccine's rolling out, but right now we still have to take the same precautions. People might be tired of hearing them, but the importance of wearing a mask, avoiding gathering in large groups, And socially distancing or physical distancing, all of those things are just as important today as they were 3 months ago, as is getting tested if you have symptoms, and following the advice that you're hearing from a local health department should you become infected with COVID.
I see people in public, and so many of them are doing so great about wearing the masks, and you know, you stand in line at the store, and everybody's making sure to stand on the little stickers and everything like that, and that's great. But you get, I mean, you walk into a building and sometimes there's like, you know, 8 or 10 people like right there, and they're all together and they're not wearing masks. What should people's reaction be when they come into, I mean, do I just walk out of the store, or should I be saying something to these people, or how do we treat that as a community?
That's a good question. So the Cooley COVID-19 Collaborative for several weeks has had a recommendation that if there's a business out there that isn't taking the correct precautions, that you just avoid going to that business. That said, I do want to call out that the overwhelming majority of businesses out there are doing all that they can to provide a safe experience, not only for their staff, but for the public. I think that if you see a group of people and they're not wearing a mask, it's best just to try to go around them. I wouldn't engage with them. There might be a reason that they don't have one on. It's not worth the confrontation. So I think patronizing those businesses that are doing the right thing is step one. And step two is just doing what you can to keep yourself safe when you see groups like that.
That's Maggie Smith from the La Crosse County Health Department. Maggie, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Maggie's colleague Jackie Cutts from the La Crosse County Health Department also joined us. Thanks, Jackie.
Thanks for having us.
Two medical doctors have been on a part of our panel so far today, Dr. Aaron Morcombe from the Mayo Clinic Health System. Dr. Morcombe, thank you very much.
Thanks. You're very welcome.
And Dr. Todd Kowalski is from Gunderson Health System. Dr. Kowalski, thanks a lot.
Yeah, appreciate the opportunity, and really would stress two final points to all listeners. Be patient with the process. This is going to take time. The number of candidates exceeds the capability of the vaccine right now. And expect more change to follow. It's been a whirlwind of change to get to this point, and there probably will be some more. So just stay tuned as we update you.
Good advice to close our conversation on. Thank you very much for that. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Our conversation about COVID-19 continues after this timeout. Remember, you can find this conversation and all of our previous shows on our website at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our program continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studio in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining me today. We've been hearing today about COVID-19, another update of how it's going in the Cooley region. We've heard from people from the County Health Department, as well as representatives from the Mayo Clinic and Gunderson Health System. And we're joined now by another doctor from the Mayo Clinic. Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald is the chair of family medicine in our region here, and also he's a family doctor at the Mayo Clinic Health System in Onalaska. Dr. Fitzgerald, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today.
You're very welcome. Glad to be here.
So in talking about COVID-19, I'm just curious, you know, the Onalaska city next to La Crosse, it's not such a small town as it used to be, but it's a little bit different environment than working like in a hospital setting, you know, on the La Crosse campus. What has it been like for you as a family doc in one of our area towns serving people with COVID-19?
Yeah, I think when you ask healthcare providers, it's been a whirlwind, you know. Things came on rapidly last March, and we had to change what we do on a daily basis. Really, especially in the outpatient practice, we shut everything down, moved everything to virtual, did that for a period of time. I think when we figured out that this was not going to be an issue that was going to resolve itself within the first 3 to 4 months, we in May figured out we need to get back to seeing patients, and we couldn't not take care of our patients, even with face-to-face encounters, as we wouldn't, take care of their heart disease and their diabetes and their cancer, along with doing the health maintenance of preventing, breast cancer and colon cancer and some of those things we do with regular checkups. So we pivoted to kind of a hybrid of both virtual care and returning back to face-to-face care. We followed the best advice we got from the state and from the CDC and other really smart people, and wore our masks and our eye protection and our PPE, and took it with faith that that would be good enough to prevent our employees from getting COVID and really prevent us from spreading it to our patients. And thankfully, the studies have shown that if you just follow the rules and you follow all the guidelines pretty consistently, we've had very little spread in our employees. We've experienced almost zero spread from employees to patients. And really the patient, the employees that ended up getting COVID got it from outside of work. So if we follow the rules, we found that we could do our jobs and take care of patients and do it in a safe manner, which was very helpful.
You talk about following
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you talk about following the rules, and they are fairly simple and have been fairly consistent throughout. You're talking about physical distancing. You're talking about general hygiene as far as washing your hands and things that we should be doing anyway. And you're talking about wearing a mask when you're going to be outside of your household. And yet you still hear people repeating things that they hear on YouTube or the internet or whatever, saying things like, "Oh, masks don't really do anything," and I don't really want to wear it, and you're just being a bunch of sheep and all this kind of stuff. How do we answer this many months into it? How do we answer those concerns?
Yeah, I think especially now you can answer it with data. Internally, if you wear your mask, and really, I think people had misconceptions about what healthcare providers were using to try to prevent the spread. I think there was a perception that we were all in hazmat suits and wearing PAPRs and having medical grade PPE as opposed to what people would have in the community. And really, in our facilities as an outpatient, it was a mask just like you would buy at a store, and it was a pair of eye protection like you would buy at a store, and it was washing your hands, and you could do that safely. My job as a primary care provider, I at times can't physically distance from the patients and a family member that comes in. I'm in an exam room that's a little bit bigger than your closet, and we have to do our jobs. And as long as we wore all of our personal protective equipment and followed the rules, it really has been safe and much safer than we thought it would be. So that's been reassuring. It was a little bit of a leap of faith for all of us in healthcare to get back and do our jobs. And thankfully, it ended up being a positive leap of faith.
The worst case scenarios, obviously, are the ones that we hear about in the news so often. We've heard about 400,000 people in America having passed away from this disease. It's one of the top leading causes of death in 2020, COVID-19. And yet there's most people don't experience symptoms on that extreme end. So like, talk about just the spectrum of what people are experiencing and. I don't know if it's I don't want to downplay the worst case scenario, but like, what are most people going to experience if they might have COVID-19?
Yeah. And again, it varies per age. I think that's what we found as this went along. People who are low risk from a, previous healthcare condition standpoint, and people who are younger in age tend to get minor illness or be asymptomatic. So maybe they have flu-type symptoms, they can have GI symptoms, you can have a headache, but tend to not have either the moderate or severe illness at a higher rate. As age increases, even into 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, the percentage of people who get, at least a moderate illness, which, again, would be a flu symptoms, fevers, respiratory symptoms, so cough and shortness of breath, the percentage of people that get that increases. And then as you get into people who are kind of 65 and above, the percentage of moderate to severe illness is significantly higher. And it's those patients who kind of have risk factors and who have age as a risk factor that tend to have a higher risk of hospital admission. One of the really good things we've done at Mayo Clinic is right away we put in a very well thought out criteria around every patient who had a positive COVID test, we put their risk on a scale, and those people are at the highest risk. We made sure that we had a provider virtually contact them and enroll them in a virtual care system that made sure we kept track of those people and tried to prevent them from getting more ill. And if they did, you know, get them the care they needed.
What is it after all this time that is what concerns do you still have as a physician about either the message that needs to get out to the public or the message that the public is getting or how we as a public are responding to messages from you in healthcare and that, you know, what concerns do you still have or what do you wish we would be more cognizant of?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. You know, I think you touched on it earlier. By nature, I think of as where we've been as a country and you know, just by nature of who we are as a country, there has been some distrust of the advice that's been giving. There's been a little bit of distrust of people in authority. You mentioned masking, you know, distancing. I think, you know, of course, there's been debate around, you know, whether we should be closing businesses and some of those types of things and whether quarantines are necessary. And really, I've heard it at work from patients, you know, of whether this is a real thing for many for a long while. A lot of people thought COVID was a hoax. They thought it was things other than the reality of what it was. We've gotten to a point, I think, in our state, especially in my community, that I think with the help of the other healthcare system in town and with the county health department, we had a really good, consistent message out there. And I think we, you know, while we had a lot of illness here in the early to late fall, people in my community listened and they behaved better. And the numbers of infected people came down and allowed us to catch up from a healthcare standpoint, so our hospitals were not at risk of being overrun. I think now, with vaccines being more available, we have some treatments in the outpatient setting. The immune therapy for our most highly at-risk patients has been exceptionally effective in preventing that severe disease where people are going to end up in a hospital and in an ICU. So there's some things we can do with people who do get COVID that's actually much better than it was even 6 months ago. What I worry about now is complacency. I'm worried that people think, you know, because there's vaccine around, or even, you know, those of us who are lucky enough to have gotten their vaccine, they don't have to follow the rules. They can go back to doing whatever they want. And again, I'm as anxious as anyone to get back to life as usual, to not have to wear a mask and a pair of goggles all day, and wash my hands 100 times a day, which we do in healthcare anyway. I can't wait to be in a restaurant. I can't wait to go to a tavern and have a beer. I mean, there's a lot of things that we want to get back to, but I just don't want people to get complacent with the vaccine coming here. We still need for a period of months to behave well while we're getting that vaccine out to a significant percentage of the population, so we can open things back up and we can get back to our normal lives safely and do this do it over a period of months so this doesn't last any longer than it has to.
Speaking of the vaccine, you've gotten the vaccine. Any ill effects?
I've had two. I have both doses. I'm now a week out for my second dose. So the experts tell me I have my full immunity. So I'm very excited about that. The first shot, I think I had less soreness in my shoulder than my flu shot. The second shot, I had just a little bit of achiness in my big muscles, maybe like I took a hike yesterday. No fevers, no chills, and really was very well tolerated. So I recommend it highly. It's a very effective vaccination. The side effects are pretty rare, and if they are, if people get them, they only last for 24 to 48 hours. The technology has been around for 20 years, and I think it's a really good, safe vaccination to get. So I would encourage people to get it when available.
Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald is a family doctor at the Mayo Health Clinic, Mayo Clinic Health System in Onalaska. Easy for me to say. He's the chair of family medicine in our area. Dr. Fitzgerald, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you, Ezra. Thanks for having me.
Coming up on Newsmakers, we'll hear how some aid is on the way for businesses affected by COVID-19. That's up next. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thank you very much for joining us today. We've been talking about COVID-19 throughout the show today. We had guests from the Mayo Clinic Health System, Gunderson Health System, and the La Crosse County Health Department earlier in the show today. And now we turn our attention to the business community and the negative effects experienced by many of our local, especially small business owners, throughout the Cooley region and throughout our entire listening area. Joining us to talk about those effects is Aaron Remler, the business income developer for Cooley Cap. Aaron, thank you very much for joining the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we're talking about the business community, and in particular, a program that Cooley Cap is in the process of accepting applications for, which is called the Small Business Resiliency Fund. What is the Small Business Resiliency Fund, Aaron?
The Small Business Resiliency Fund is the product of a partnership across several different organizations throughout the La Crosse area. Ourselves, along with the La Crosse County Economic Development Fund, the City of La Crosse, the La Crosse Area Development Corporation, in downtown Main Street in La Crosse. And this was us trying to reposition and readjust an early program that we had launched earlier this year called the Small Business, the Launch La Crosse Small Business Recovery Fund. And that fund was launched in the end of May and allowed us to give small businesses grants from $1,000 to $5,000 that were able to help them cover some of the fixed costs and things that they were having trouble funding while being forced to close or operate at a reduced capacity. So in launching the Resiliency Fund, we wanted to help small business owners start thinking forward and thinking about what adjustments and pivots they could make in their business model to start serving their customers in new ways that were cognizant and accounted for the new market conditions that we're having to operate under and the sustained public concern.
So as you think about the difficulties that businesses are having and how they might be able to put some of these funds to use, what are the kind of developments that you envision or as applications are coming in, what are people applying to use that money for?
So yeah, it's really varied across the different kind of businesses that we've had approach us, but what the overarching theme has been is there are adjustments and changes that need to be made in certain business models to allow these businesses to reach their customers in new ways. And those adjustments and projects often cost money. So what we're doing with this grant program is trying to help fund those projects and finance those projects so that our local businesses can make the necessary adjustments to serve their customers. As far as what those look like, you know, we've had a lot of individuals approach us about certain online offerings or just, you know, enhancing the overall safety of the customer experience from, you know, new ways of revenue and new ways of packaging and selling their products. So it's really varied across the board. We've seen a lot of interesting and innovative projects, and we're very happy to sort of be able to catalyze that process in our local small business owners and entrepreneurs who we know are generally innovative and pretty creative already. So lots of interesting stuff.
So this isn't necessarily a fund that is meant to like over it's funding for a specific thing rather than like funding to make up for a previous shortfall of some kind, right? So like would people be applying for like the building or outfitting their business or retrofitting it with a new like sanitation station for their employees or like the cost involved in developing the capacity to take orders online or something like that? Or, you know, rather than like, well, we lost $20,000 last quarter and this will help make up for that.
Right. Correct. So we're trying to stay away from, with this fund in particular, we're trying to stay away from the fixed costs. We're trying to help these business owners kind of take more of a forward-facing approach towards how they get through the remainder of the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're trying to use this as not only a financing tool, but we want to be able to help them sort of get that mental process going in terms of what they can do to reach their customers in new ways that account for the sustained public health concern and the need to be a little extra cautious under current circumstances.
So what kind of people, let's talk about eligibility for a second. What businesses would qualify to make an application for the Small Business Resiliency Fund?
So this is open to any business in La Crosse County. Any small locally owned business with 1 to 20 employees is really the only parameters that we have.
Okay, so as long as you have 20 employees or less, you should be able to find a project and make an application.
Correct. 20 employees or less, and then just a locally owned business in the La Crosse County area.
How much funding do you have to distribute in this round of funding?
So after launching the fund in late October, we have so far granted out approximately $67,000. And we've got just north of $50,000 left to spend. And we're still, actively fundraising for this. So we're hoping that as we continue to see the need in our community and as we continue to see applications come in, that we can continue finding more funds.
You talked about still fundraising for this. So this, I mean, if somebody happens to be listening who's particularly philanthropically minded, this is a thing that they could donate to?
Yeah, absolutely. We still, so we have a landing page set up on Cooley Cap's website, cooleycap.org/business-recovery. That's the direct URL. Otherwise, you can find it just by scrolling over the top banner along the page and going to the business resource button. On that landing page, you can find general information about the program. There's also a link to the application itself, and then we have a donate line. So we can take donations directly online that will go directly to our small businesses and supporting this fund. We're also accepting, we can also accept checks at our corporate offices in Westby, 201 Melby Street, Westby, Wisconsin.
The plight of small businesses was really evident earlier on in COVID, in like March and April, when many of them were either completely closed or very, very limited in the services they were allowed to provide. After that initial shutdown, people have been pretty much open for business in one way or another. And yet, as the public is encouraged not to be, out and about in the same way that they have been previously, a lot of people are turning to convenient services like overnight, second day delivery with certain online services or things like that. Why is it important for people to try to find ways to still spend their money locally and still patronize these local businesses instead of going for the convenience factor of home delivery?
Well, as you mentioned, people are still encouraged to stay home and to keep from gathering in large groups. And we know that's had an effect on the type of foot traffic and percentage that a lot of our local businesses have been able to generate, especially through the holiday shopping season and now that we're beyond that. The big companies like Amazon that may sometimes provide with a little extra convenience, I mean, they're going to be okay. They'll be there. But the small locally owned businesses that are owned by neighbors and friends are the ones that really need your support during these difficult times. When you just under normal circumstances, when you support a local business instead of a large chain, every dollar you spend, almost half of that is going to be recirculated locally when you spend it at a local business, as opposed to just 14% on average when you spend it at a chain or a larger business. And I know that we've seen over the holiday shopping season, we had a really strong local effort to get people to shop local and put the focus on our small businesses. And there was a great response to that. And I know that the small business community and us in the economic development community are extremely grateful for that. But we are still, we still want to make sure that people, see and understand that it's still very important to continue supporting our small businesses and make sure that we can sustain the vibrancy in our community that we've built over several years.
Aaron Remler is the business income developer at Cooley Cap. Aaron, thank you very much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to stream this episode again, or if you missed a previous show that you want to stream on demand, you can find them all on our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. There are a few opportunities to listen to our show every week. 10 a.m. Fridays, our show originates on the Ideas Network 90.3 in La Crosse, and repeats at 6 p.m. on Friday and 5 a.m. on Saturday on La Crosse's WLSU 88.9. I'm Ezra Wall. Thanks very much for tuning in. Thanks also to our producers, Dawn Jewell and John Davis, for the rest of the La Crosse staff. Join us next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.